fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. Do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener-supported radio. Reporting the danger, unafraid, right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution, revolution, revolution. Radio!
When you attend a funeral, it is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go, all suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char. And let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are.
You know, here we thought nuclear war was going to be the problem confronting the world, when Bill Gates had been warning us for years, decades actually, the real problem would be a pandemic. And guess what? We've got one. Compliments of Bill Gates. Sensational. Before I introduce my guest this evening, I want to speak out about my producer, Mitchell Bupp, who's a consummate professional. I've been uncommunicative, unable to reach Mitchell for 3 days now. I'm terribly worried. I know there was a major storm in his area in Virginia. But I'm calling out to everyone out there, if you can locate Mitchell or let me know he's okay, I would be most grateful, most gratified. I'm very concerned about him. Meanwhile, my guest this evening is quite well known for his work on the electric universe. He has a book about Planet X coming out in a new edition. He's here from a distant land. James McCanney, welcome to The Raw Deal.
Thanks, James. Good to be here.
Yeah, I'm delighted to have you back. Why don't we start about this new edition of your book? I've actually got the cover here. I could pull it up. I'd like to hear what's going on that score, because you're rather well known for the work you've done on this matter.
Well, it's the 30th anniversary just about today of the real discovery of the comet Hale-Bopp. And it turns out, as I've discovered through my years of analyzing and going back and forth, that that's what Robert Harrington was searching for when he was on his NASA contract. It was called Search for Planet X, literally. It started in the 1980s, and he finally solidified the discovery in 1990. And so and then it was 1991 when he finalized the orbital parameters, and then at that point understood there was a companion, which allowed him to determine the mass of the nucleus. And that's what he was looking for, something about four Earth masses. It was way down coming in to the solar system. So anyway, I released a eDVD in 2015. It was the 20th anniversary of the official discovery of Hale-Bopp, but it had been discovered literally 5 years earlier and had been kept secret. So this whole entangled web with the CIA transitioning from George Bush Sr. to Bill Clinton, taking over NASA in 1991, creating a whole laundry list of false characters who would then for the next decade dominate the radio airwaves regarding false and phony stories, fabrications regarding this topic of Planet X. And it just goes on and on. So this book is a summary of everything that I learned. And then, of course, Hale-Bopp was visible in the solar system for a period of 6 years, naked eye visible comet, and then it finally went out of the solar system and it's on its way out. It'll be back in about 2,600 years. So anyway, this book is an update. I call it Planet X Update 2020, The Real History of Planet X, and it's available right now in pre-sale on my webpage.
Now, comets, I presume, of course, act in accordance with the classic laws of physics. I don't know that the electric universe makes a difference, but you could spell it out for us if you would.
Well, here's the situation. When I did my pioneering work, I was at Cornell University in 1979 to 81, I realized that comets were not dirty snowballs, but they were actually an electrical discharge of what I call the solar capacitor. So I had my research, I filled in all the blanks. Where does this capacitor come from? Where does the electrical field come from, et cetera? And so part of this, if a comet is big enough, it can accumulate matter and become bigger and bigger. And that does a couple things. It makes it bigger. It gives it an atmosphere, and also it modifies its orbit by what I call the tail drag. There's so much tail material that it actually changes the orbit of the object, and it reduces the elliptical orbit to a circular orbit and reduces that circular orbit even further to a smaller circular orbit. So it's literally the way planets are made. So the big comets are literally becoming planets. And so that's what I learned. And of course, that was what all the controversy was about with my work through the decades. And so anyway, on the cover of the book, you'll see a picture of, that's actually a picture of Halley's Comet taken in 1986 by NASA, which is actually a relatively small comet. But this book is about Hale-Bopp and the big cover up with the CIA and just unbelievable contusions that went on through that whole era from 1991, actually 1990, on through the next many decades, really.
Well, what were they seeking to cover up, James?
Well, the fact that Hale-Bopp, here was the deal. The whole deal came down to this. Harrington made his final determination of what later became the nucleus of Hale-Bopp. It was about four Earth masses. It was down because they were looking there because his assistant, Tom Van Plandert, had pointed out that the orbits of Uranus and Neptune were changing. The planets were being pulled down out of their orbit. And so they went about this search to search for this object. But the thing was, in 1991 then, when he went back to New Zealand to finalize the final pictures and determine the orbit, two things happened. He discovered it had a companion, which allowed him to determine the mass, which was much bigger than Earth mass-wise, four times the mass of Earth. And he determined the orbit, and it was on a very near direct collision course with Earth at that time. So the whole lid came off. A guy named Dan Golden came out of the CIA at the behest of George Bush Sr., took over NASA, put the lid on it, and I observed all this because I knew all these people at NASA and Goddard and JPL and in the university and the military. And so basically they put the lid on NASA and kept this thing secret for the next 5 years till it was officially discovered as what we know today as Comet Halebop. But the amount of insanity that went around this whole topic, it took me a long time to put all of this together, but that was literally the Planet X object that they were looking for. The Vatican was in on this. I mean, it just couldn't get any more involved than the whole story is really convoluted.
So this clarifies
the history.
Was it hysteria because of the apparent trajectory toward Earth? Was it believed at the time there'd be a massive collision between this object and Earth?
It was within a million miles. So that's four lunar distances. And if you had, for example, a small meteor that was coming in the solar system and had a trajectory of four lunar distances from Earth, and that far out means it could change because the calculations and the determinations, the initial measurements were not very exact, it could mean that, yes, you could have it even much closer or even a direct hit. So this was going down in the intelligence communities as the transition from George Bush Sr. to Bill Clinton took place. And all of this was going on in the background. And so, oddly enough, my work was central to all of this because I explained, the whole issue that this would become a comet and eventually become a planet and its orbit would change drastically. So anyway, it's a very complicated story, but pretty intriguing as far as all of the innuendos that went on. The Vatican started building telescopes. They staffed them with people from the University of Minnesota who I knew there. I knew these astronomers at the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis, and they staffed the first Vatican telescope, which was built down by Phoenix. Then the Vatican built another bigger telescope down in South America, and then they actually built another one down by the South Pole, all with the determination of understanding Comet Halebop. And like I say, staffed with professional astronomers.
Well, you said that these comets can grow in mass and turn into planets. That presumably would occur when they're captured by the gravitational field of a star. Are you implying, therefore, that Neptune, Mars, Earth, Jupiter, and so forth were at one time comets themselves?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, the only original member of the solar system was Jupiter. And it has all the characteristics of the sun. Their spin axes are perfectly aligned. Their atmospheric compositions are exactly the same. And even Saturn is errant. It's quite a bit different, although similar. But Jupiter was a small star companion to the sun, and everything else was captured. Everything.
That's really fascinating, James. I don't recall learning that when I was a student of the history of science, including physics and astronomy. It's a remarkable development. And you were a pioneer in this field.
Yes, this was literally, if you count back where I was at Cornell, that was 40 years ago. So this was at this time in my career, I was now in the mathematics department at Cornell. I had been relieved of my position in the physics department because of this, because I was publishing in peer-reviewed journals this work, and it did not go over well. And so then I went to the mathematics department. So I have the strange claim that I taught in two different departments at Cornell and continued to publish my work there. Until finally the powers that be, the Carl Sagan, et cetera, from the astronomy department came over and objected to my presence again. But the whole story was just absolutely bizarre from that point onwards.
You know, James, that's profoundly disturbing. Of course, you're talking about the year of 1980. I earned my PhD in 1970. So you were roughly a decade after my study of physics and astronomy. But it's appalling that members of a department of physics would object to a colleague who's publishing in peer-reviewed journals just because they can't wrap their minds around your conclusions. I mean, that's ghastly, unbelievable, especially when you're talking about a mathematical science like physics, where everything is quantifiable. You can conduct experiments and measurements and observations, subject all your hypotheses to test. Here you're doing absolutely brilliant path-breaking work, and they're objecting because it threatens the old paradigm.
That's exactly what happened. You know, and thinking back on the day that I went into the physics department, Doug Pitchen was the chairman of the physics department, and he called me in, and I came in, and he had my papers all over his desk. And he goes, "What's this?" And I'm like, "Well, it looks like you have my papers on your desk." And he said that he got really angry. And I thought this was, you know, if he just objected to something I said or disagreed, that was one thing. But he was like he had a hot poker up his behind. I mean, it was like that kind of anger. And it was really strange. I mean, it was an anger that was not, it was not academic. Let's just put it that way. So anyway, yeah, the whole story, that's where it started. And I had no idea. I had been out of the country for about 10 years. And so I came back in. I didn't know anything about all of the different things that were going on politically in astronomy. I'm just doing my work. And I happened to be using NASA data to point out all of my work that I had. Pretty much a lot of it was developed, the theoretical work. So I'm combining data with my theoretical work, publishing it. And when I started hitting resistance in the local journals, I went over across campus. There was a guy named Hans Bethe. He was a Nobel Prize winner, one of Albert Einstein's friends. Einstein ended up at Princeton, and Hans Bethe ended up at Cornell after they came across the pond there. And so I went and talked to him, and I said, "Look, I'm having this problem publishing." And he said, "Okay, here are some journals over in Europe. You go there and see what happens." So that's where my article started getting published in European journals and European editors, etc. And the flack that came out of this was just amazing. It was like the Americans versus the Europeans.
But it's not as though the European physicists were less competent than the Americans. In fact, by my standard, they were more competent because they were more open-minded to new and original path-breaking research. This is a stunning and profoundly disturbing story, James.
Yeah. This is that's the beginning. And then then there was Comet Halley and there was Comet Giacobini-Zinner. I mean, I'll just give you another little anecdote, and these have happened all the time. But about 1985, 86, there was a comet Giacobini-Zinner, and NASA had this old aging solar observatory satellite. It was called ISWE3. And I knew the people that were the main scientists on this. They were at Goddard, and they worked out of Los Alamos, but they redirected this to go out and visit Giacobini-Zinner. It was the first probe to reach a comet. And so anyway, that all happened, and I had some papers that came around that and some meetings at American Geophysical Union meetings, some presentations, etc. But anyway, I went to supper that night with a guy named Tycho von Rosenvinge. He was the lead scientist on that, a young guy out of Goddard. And then a guy named Jonathan Eberhardt, who was the head editor of a weekly kind of medium tech magazine called Science News. And so Jonathan Eberhardt was very excited, and he published an article on my work in Science News. And he got a call, and they roasted him out. And they said, if you ever talk to McCanny, ever mention his name again, you will not ever, you know, have a, you know, be out of your job, you know. And so anyway, one day I called Jonathan, as I, you know, we were friends. He said, don't call me again. Don't talk to me. I don't ever want to hear your name again. And bam, that was it.
James, this is shocking. I mean, you understand political censorship. This is censorship in science, which is supposed to be our paragon of objectivity and impartiality and absence of political contamination, when what you're telling me is something like the opposite.
Well, it was, that's just one anecdote. I have hundreds of them that, you know, through my career that have gone through dealing with this. But anyway, I could go on and on.
Well, I remember, you know, I was at a symposium where Eric Von Doniken, Chariots of the Gods, was being featured, and he was talking about alien visitations to Earth to create ancient civilizations, you know. And it's pretty generally not met with a warm reception, lots of skepticism. I made a point at one point, however, of going up to him and shaking his hand, and he wondered why I wanted to shake his hand. It was just, I just wanted to shake his hand. I mean, it was unconventional. I think he was actually selling a lot of books. I imagine you probably at one point or another run across his work. I just had a curiosity about what you thought.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
What's your impression of Von Doniken?
Well, he was an opportunist in a sense, because those topics had already been, you know, dealt with in more private circles, so to speak. But he was the guy that put it out there in the public eye and, yeah, sold a boatload of books internationally and was known. Chariots of the Gods.
Yes.
Was that the name?
That was one of them. Yeah. Chariots of the Gods.
One of them. Yeah. There was a series. But yeah, he was. You know, I wish I had his marketing capability.
do you regard his hypotheses as plausible, or do you think they're not?
No, well, I mean, first of all, the whole issue of aliens, I actually touch on that in this book here a little bit about there was some pretty hot contentions, things going on with Comet Hilda, but what Von Doniken did is he took the Mayan glyphs that look like a guy. I mean, you could kind of interpret it as a guy sitting in a spaceship going off in.
Or looking at a telescope or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I personally have a lot of work in Mayan archaeology. I spent a good part of my early. That's why I was not in the U.S. prior to Cornell. I was down in Latin America crawling through the jungle following my nose. But. As one of the things I was doing, but I didn't see what he was saying there. I didn't see that as being indicative of spacecraft and aliens or whatever. That whole alien issue is one thing. But no, I didn't agree with what Von Doniken did there. But like I say, he sold a lot of books and it caused a lot of excitement, which is good. I mean, it's.
Yeah. I agree. If you can get people hooked, then even if it has a pseudoscientific character, if they follow it far enough, they may become engaged in real scientific research.
Right. Back in the 90s, I used to be a regular on the original Art Bell show, and there was a guy named Whitley Strieber, who was a co-host with Art quite a bit of the time. And so I'd been and I got to know Whitley, not face-to-face personal, but just on the air, you know, interviews and talking offline. But he had a real problem because he had some encounters, and he couldn't encounters of the third kind when he was up at his upstate New York cabin where he used to go to write. And so anyway, he ended up on the Johnny Carson show one night with Carl Sagan. And I know Carl because he was at Cornell.
Right.
You know, he was the guy that fetched the dogs.
Put the quietus to your association with the Department of Mathematics, yeah.
Right. And so anyway, they were there, and Johnny Carson is his normal self, and Whitley Strieber is trying to be serious. And Johnny Carson or Carl Sagan is like, I don't have time for that silliness. you know, just pulling him on the air.
And, do you think that was the idea, to bring him on in order to lampoon him?
That's right. That's right.
Johnny pulled that with Jim Garrison, who didn't take it too kindly. He was a very formidable guy who won like 99% of the cases he ever brought, and undoubtedly would have prevailed against Clay Shaw had not for the untimely death of his three key witnesses. Figure the odds of that, James. You know, you're bringing a lawsuit and you got three witnesses, roughly middle-aged men in seemingly normal health, and all three of them die before you can get them on the witness stand.
Well, I know.
Stunning stuff. You've really had a fascinating history, James. I love it. I mean, I've encountered a certain amount of academic abuse, but nothing of the magnitude of yours.
Yeah, there's so much going on in the background, but...
Yeah, tell me more. Yeah, go ahead, fill in. So much going on in the background.
I could tell stories all night.
I love it. I find it fascinating. Actually, one of the books I'm using. You're breaking up a bit. I'm not surprised. There are all kinds of reasons that can happen. One of the books I've used in courses on critical thinking is Frauds and Fallacies in Archaeology, which is really quite a wonderful book. Go ahead.
Yeah.
James, repeat yourself.
Anyway.
You got blanked out, if you wouldn't mind repeating what you were just saying.
Okay, yeah, another story. One of the possibly sadder days of my life was when I drove up out of Ithaca the last day. This was in 1981. I had now been relieved of my position in the mathematics department. And that's another call into the head of the mathematics department, Chairman Dr. Wolfgang Fuchs. He was a German guy, very, very reserved, very good mathematician. And I had been teaching calculus. And so he had a petition on his desk with 350 names on it of students who were petitioning that I continue teaching their calculus class. And he said, I've got this petition here. You're excellent teaching. You know, I don't have any problems with you. He said, you're the only person in the mathematics department of Cornell that ever published in a peer-reviewed astrophysics journal. That's what he told me. And they said, but they're telling me they want me to fire you. And so
isn't that disgusting?
Yeah. Yeah. And so anyway, after that was all over, I stayed around Ithaca a little while into the summer.
You were fired?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I hung around Ithaca a little bit into the summertime, and then I thought, well, okay, I don't have any, I'm running out of money. I got to get out of here. So I got in my car and drove up the hill out of Ithaca. And I'll tell you, it was like I knew that what I was doing was beyond Nobel Prize winning material.
Yes.
I was on to something. I was surrounded by NASA scientists, by people like Carl Sagan, astronomers of world renown, you know, Nobel Prize winners like Hans Bethe. And I was leaving because they forced me out.
Isn't that appalling?
It was bizarre, you know, knowing. And I went back ultimately to Minnesota, to the North Woods, where I stayed for quite a while. And then I came out in about February and got a real job in telecommunications.
Whereabouts in Minnesota were you holed up?
Up in the North Woods, up in the Canadian border. And then I went with
you mean north of Duluth, along the lake?
Oh yeah, you might say up along the lake and then north up on the literally on the border, like a mile. And then some people that I knew had purchased a mining stake, an old mining stake up in Canada. And I went up and I spent part of the winter up there, and I lived outside. I didn't have even a tent. And I lived there for into February, and then I left, walked down the river that was frozen, and got all the way back to Minneapolis and ended up getting a job in telecommunications, where I spent the next 10 years as a systems engineer.
Wow.
But it's just unbelievable. And, you know, the work that I've done is I'm also contacted occasionally by what I call tier one scientists or military scientists. And they come out and they sometimes ask me questions or because they know what I'm doing is correct. I worked in the mid 90s with a group of Russian scientists from the University of Novosibirsk. And they were atmospheric scientists, and they translated all my work into Russian and were teaching it in the university there.
What an accolade, James.
Yeah. I mean, the things are so bizarre. I went to an American Geophysical Union meeting. This was down in Fort Lauderdale, and they always have these kind of like trips, like field trips. And so in the evening, they had this big boat with, you know, could hold 1,000 people. And it was something that you know, it was one of these events. You paid a little extra, and they had supper there and drinks and stuff. So I went on this, and we're going just up the Intercoastal Canal out of Fort Lauderdale. It's evening, and the sun's going down. And so I go up on the front bow, and I'm up there all by myself. And this young girl comes up, beautiful young blonde Russian woman, and so I'm talking to her. Nothing happened, by the way. I don't want to lead into this.
Sure.
But she's talking to me, and she was in solar physics. She had just gotten her PhD, and we talked for a while, and I was talking about solar physics. And I said, by the way, my name is James McCanny. And she said, I know. I studied your work as a little girl.
Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? I'll take her compliment over Carl Sagan's dismissal anytime. I mean, yeah. It's embarrassing that figures like Carl Sagan get so much publicity and are so widely lauded by the mainstream, which of course doesn't know its elbow from its a-hole. So there we have it, right? Just as they're getting involved in a massive political scam of the American public over this coronavirus pandemic, which is political and not a medical emergency. But I'm very interested, since you're not residing in the United States, what your take is from a more distant perspective.
It's just pure insanity. I deal with people in China all the time. They shut down for a period of 3 weeks, which was the latency period of the virus. They, I was in communication with these people that, you know, business things with my wind and water business, contacts there. And it was over. They went back to work and they isolated it. They had initial tracking and vectoring right at the beginning, something that now, after months and months in the United States, now they want to track everybody here, which is absolutely insane. You have to do that when it's very fresh, when the virus, there's two and or three people. Remember when there were two in Washington and two in Texas or something? That's when you do vectoring. That's when you do contact tracing, not when 2 million people have gotten contact. But they want to use that now as a way of keeping track of everybody, of monitoring everybody's whereabouts. But what's going on in the United States is absolutely bonkers, insane.
Yeah, I couldn't agree. I couldn't agree more. Complete lunacy. Even all the strictures are imposing, the lockdowns, the face masks, the shelter in place. They're all counterproductive. They're all actually have the effect of weakening our immune system. The face masks are particularly harmful. You're recycling your CO2. Your depleted red cells need fresh oxygen, not more of the old, which means they're not able to supply your cells, including your brain cells. So my estimate, James, is when this is all said and done, the average IQ of Americans will have dropped by 5 points.
Yeah, that's probably true. But then when they come out of this, their immune systems will be weakened and they'll be far more susceptible to getting something
exactly
that can affect them.
Exactly. We maintain our immune system by interacting with other people. Thing. Yes.
The Chinese knew it's daily. It's a daily thing. And the Chinese knew immediately that this was brought to them by the United States.
Yes, yes, yes. We have a Nobel Prize winner who's talked about the virus.
I'm losing my...
That's okay, James. We'll just do what we can. Who has observed that this virus had to be manufactured because it's good in all different climates. And if it were a real virus, it would be highly variable, different in hot climates than cold. But this is the same throughout all, meaning it has to be engineered and offered to give up his Nobel Peace Prize if he could be shown to be wrong. His Nobel Prize. James and I are being intermittently interrupted. I'm not surprised this will happen.
Yeah,
go ahead. Go ahead, James.
So the Chinese, the one thing Trump can't figure out is why the Chinese were not, Trump could not figure out why the Chinese were reticent to respond to him. But the Chinese knew that this was introduced from the United States. The Wuhan lab was funded by the United States. It was not a Chinese lab.
Yeah, but it was done by Anthony.
The United States foreign.
But it was done by Anthony Fauci, who gave him $3.7 million to continue research that had begun at Fort Detrick until Fort Detrick was shut down and then carried on at North Carolina Chapel Hill until they caught up with them, and then he transferred it to Wuhan. So Fauci is the guy who's the goat. I refer to him as Dr. Anthony Tony the Rat Fauci because he's running a medical mafia here with Bill Gates as the don. It's so disgraceful, James. It's beyond belief.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. The other thing is they know that the test, this PCR test that they've been using is a false test. It does not test for coronavirus.
Right.
So that's why they wanted everybody to be tested, because then they could run up these numbers.
Right.
And the one thing I can say that I've learned is this was supposed to be far worse.
Yeah.
When the first people came out in March, they said, oh, there's going to be millions dead. They were expecting that. They were expecting that. And what they didn't plan on was the resistance of the worldwide population to this particular virus. And so there's a high active antibody in the public for this virus. It's something they didn't count on. So when Bill Gates was saying everybody's going to have to be vaccinated, he was counting on the fear factor with millions of people. I mean, every third house down the street, there'd be a family dead lying out in the street. That's what they expected. It didn't happen. So they started bolstering the numbers. They got the CDC to get doctors to fake death reports and the fake test. They kept doing is reporting the numbers. And what they didn't do was do vector tracing right at the very beginning. That's where you isolate these little groups. You isolate it and it's all over. Then, okay, that's it. It would be like, let's say this was leprosy. And all of a sudden, somebody turns up with leprosy. Wow, you just get that person, you isolate him, you isolate everybody he's been around for the last 3-4 weeks. And that's it. End of story. It ends right there. You selectively isolate very small groups. But they let this thing run its course. All they did was announce, oh, today there were more cases than yesterday. Tomorrow there's going to be more cases. That's not what you would do if you were in charge of this on a national level. You would do vectoring right away. When we had 2 cases in Washington, 2 in Texas, boom, they should have shut it down right there locally. That would have been the end of it.
And you don't quarantine healthy people, you quarantine the sick. I mean, this has been bizarre from the beginning, and I'm convinced it's to deliberately make matters worse. They also did not anticipate that there'd be a cheap, an inexpensive and completely effective antidote in the form of hydroxychloroquine, which has been around for, 50, 60 years. Trump has been doing his best to get that message over to the public, but he's being attacked on every side, even though Anthony Fauci himself knew already in 2005 that chloroquine was a, a wonder drug in relation to the coronavirus, of which this is referred to as SARS-2. It was completely effective against SARS-1. It is not only therapeutic, so it'll cure it if you get it, but it's prophylactic. It'll prevent you getting it if you're already on it. So they have used the mass media to attack every reference to hydroxychloroquine. You'd think it was taking a cyanide tablet, James. That's the way they're trying to demonize it. It's completely insane.
Yeah, I contacted the first guy that actually came out publicly. His name was Dr. Grace. I think William Grace. He's from the one of the New York hospitals. And I actually got a hold of him, called him up. And I sent him a protocol that I had come up with, which was hydrogen peroxide. Because if you look in the medical literature, hydrogen peroxide is used literally to put on a rag to clean a surface and kill the coronavirus. And so, plus you can get hydrogen peroxide in food grade, 15% concentration food grade. And there are people who take it every day to build their immune system. And so, and also what I came up with was to put it in a vapor form where you would, because the virus typically is up in the sinuses.
Nasal passage, yeah.
In the eyes. And so you would, if you had a vaporizer, in fact, that's one of the disinfectant techniques that they're using to disinfect airplanes, et cetera, is using hydrogen peroxide vapor. So don't you think if you breathe in the hot vapors, just a little bit, the concentration, the amount you would actually breathe in would be very small. It's food grade. I mean, you could, it would be the equivalent medically of putting a strawberry up your nose in terms, you don't need a doctor's prescription to do this.
Yes.
You don't need the CDC or the health department or the NIH to okay it because it's already on the food shelf, like buying an apple. You can buy hydrogen peroxide right in the food shelf. And so, I mean, and this will kill the virus. So if you get it in your system, I would think, and the issue with hydroxychloroquine is that they take it with erythromas, I never can say that,
Azithromycin, yeah, it's an antibiotic. Yeah, and zinc.
But they've had problems with older people that have heart arrhythms and other heart issues. But with hydrogen peroxide, there's no contraindication for anything, for age or whatever.
Well, that's
The thing.
That's sensational, James. And as much as I've done on this subject, where I've been doing a daily update on the latest with regard to the alleged pandemic for more than 2 months, every single day with Dean Ryan in L.A. and Mike Barra in Seattle. I've been doing a daily update. This is the first time I've heard about hydrogen peroxide as being a perfect cure for the coronavirus. Excellent.
Yeah. I'll send you the email that I sent to Dr. Grace, and I've also sent that information to a number of other people, but it is literally in the literature. And if you look at the use of hydrogen peroxide, it goes back to the late 1920s where a doctor started using it for flu and he would put it in their ear, a couple of drops. And that's apparently his belief was that the flu virus got into your system through your ear. And so he would put it in the ear and he had tremendous success. And there's an anecdote story about Dr. Mercola, who's an internet, you know, he sells his own products on the internet. He had a story about hydrogen peroxide relative to the flu on his webpage, and they came after him and made him take it down. And then when he took it down, so many people called in and said, hey, I do that all the time. I use hydrogen peroxide all the time. It's an old kind of housewife's cure for flu. You know, it's cheap. It's like a couple bucks for a bottle. This the whole family could use for a year. And so anyway, Dr. Mercola put hydrogen peroxide relative to flu back up on his webpage. And there's a bunch of webpages dealing with exactly that topic. So it's been around, it's been used, it's harmless. It's, you know, I mean, you don't want to drink a whole bottle of it.
Right. Well, I'm so glad to hear this because I begun a new show called The Conspiracy Guy. It debuts tonight, James, and I'm talking about the coronavirus. and I'm going to add this to the subjects I discuss. I mean, I've got like 120 slides minimally to cover this. It begins at 10 to midnight Central, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern, 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific at JimTheConspiracyGuy.com. So if anyone wants to check it out, if you want a rather comprehensive review of what we know and how to reason through about coronavirus, whether it's real or an illusion, using the principles of scientific reasoning, that's exactly what I'm going to lay out during the very first of these programs, which will be occurring at the rate of one every week, each Sunday at JimTheConspiracyGuy.com. So I'm really glad you mentioned this, James. Please do send me, you know, what you have there, and I'll make a slide about it. I'll be sure to include it. This is really important because it's another inexpensive, even more easily obtainable than hydroxychloroquine. I had to have my physician write a prescription for me because I wanted to have it in case I came down with the symptoms, given that I'm in an older age group and I'm not free from preconditions. I want to have it here on hand, which I do now, but I like this hydrogen peroxide solution. It sounds completely elegant. I mean, how simple can you get to solve what seems to be a complex problem?
Yeah. Well, the other thing is it has been used for possibly a better part of the last century for malaria, which is the other thing that hydroxychloroquine is famous for.
Yes.
Other things, lupus, etc. But what it really was used for, and that's why they consider that in Africa, there's not a lot of the COVID virus affecting them because they've taken so much hydroxychloroquine that they have it in their system.
Yes.
And for some reason, it triggers the immune system to deal with this this virus, because that's actually what it's doing. It's an autoimmune trigger. And the same thing, that's why people will take hydrogen peroxide on a daily basis, is to build their immune system. But it has been used on a regular basis when they don't have hydroxychloroquine, they will use hydrogen peroxide for the for malaria.
Wonderful, James. That's so fascinating. Of course, this is all so bloody political. I've many times described this as a political pandemic and not a medical emergency. And where there are key players here at the World Health Organization, at the Center for Disease Control, and the National Institutes of Health, who have been massively funded by Bill Gates and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, so they're very much under his thumb. I mean, there's no question in my mind that this was the master plan of Bill Gates to depopulate the world by way of vaccine, and where we even had the prominent constitutional attorney Alan Dershowitz say we had no right to refuse a vaccination, which is insanity. Is he unfamiliar with the Nuremberg Code, which emerged when there was all this medical experimentation on human beings? Everyone has a right to deny a medical procedure unless they give informed consent. And as you know, James, that requires they know all the risks and the hazards as well as the potential benefits that attend the operation. Absent informed consent, the government does not have that right. And for Alan Dershowitz to be making such a statement very publicly has led me to condemn him to hell. And I mean that as literally as I can. I've done a lot of looking at informed consent and so forth. And the British Society for Medical Practitioners explains that if you're performing a treatment on a patient without informed consent, that's a criminal act that you could be prosecuted for battery or more and be liable for the consequences thereof. That Dershowitz should have sold his soul for a mess of pottage. I find that shameless. I refer to him now as Despicable Dershowitz.
Wow, I did not know that. Yeah, that's unbelievable because, you know, that I was looking up various things, and it turns out that there was a court, Supreme Court case where they upheld the state's right to enforce vaccinations. And there again, they're making the assumption that, number one, they're safe, and number two, that somehow they actually do what they're supposed to do.
That's right.
And that's an assumption. Their decision is based on that assumption. It's not a valid assumption.
It's most certainly not. Gates vaccines in India paralyzed nearly 500,000 children. He has done terrible damage to African children. The relationship between his vaccines and autism, it's a perfect statistical correlation. The N1H1 vaccine causes brain damage. Now, is Alan Dershowitz ignorant of these facts, which you can discover effortlessly by doing a little, just a modicum of research? Or is he just so much bought and sold that he's willing to come out and make bald-faced lies? I damn him either way, because if he hadn't done the research, James, and he wasn't entitled to express his opinion, and if he had done his research and offered that opinion, then he's obviously corrupt as anyone could possibly be.
Yeah, I don't understand his motivation, but there might be some other things going on in the background. This whole vaccination thing is so big. I watched a video by a doctor. His name is Roy Martina. Very good videos. But in the video he's been a doctor for, I think, 40 years. He said he has been, with the vaccinations. He said it's not the vaccinations where the pharmaceutical companies make their money. It's for all of the remedies that they get to sell the parents for all these kids that are vaccine damaged.
That's right. That's right. That's right. It's like the Defense Department contractors giving defective products so they can get the maintenance contract that double or triple their profit margins. Yeah, the flu vaccine will give you the flu. The polio vaccine will give you polio. This other vaccine will give you autism. I mean, it's just disgraceful, James, as disgraceful as it gets. We're coming close to the top of the hour, and before we get there, I want to explain to everyone, I do not have my producer. Mitchell is not here. I'm going to give you a phone number that will come into my Skype, and I will do my best to manage and field your calls, but I got to tell you, there's no guarantees. The number, if you'd like to speak to James McCanny and me tonight, is 608-466-4339. I repeat, 608-466-4339. I've had problems with this before when Bill from Australia, for example, would try to call me and I try to feed him into the Skype when I lost the connection. Now, I can't afford to lose the connection because I've got no way to reconnect without going through quite a hassle. So I want to keep James with me, but I'll do my best to bring you in and we'll see if it'll work. Accept my apology in advance if it doesn't. Again, I repeat, the phone number to speak to James McCanny and me this evening is 608-466-4339. Give it a call. Give it a try. We'll see how it works. James, we have a few more minutes for you to add further thoughts of your own.
This entire thing has gotten so out of hand. And I want to mention that this is a classic disinformation ploy where the pharmaceutical companies, very professionally, they create two sides. And the only two sides are the anti-vaxxers, so-called anti-vaxxers, and the pharmaceutical companies, and they make the anti-vax side as the only possible solution. And so the reason they do that is because it garners the fewest number of people that will go all that way to completely have no vaccinations. It turns out that vaccinations have a place. For example, I would like to get a tetanus shot because a lot of the places I go, but you can no longer get just a tetanus shot, just the old-fashioned. You go into the doctor, you're going into the woods or the tropics or something. And now they got to give you three shots at the same time. I don't want the other two shots, nor do I want three shots together. All I want is a tetanus shot. So this, what used to be something that was beneficial, has turned into this Frankenstein monster of 72 vaccinations for kids by the time they're 16 years old. It's insanity.
Well, it's because for Bill Gates, vaccines are a business. And the more vaccines, the more his profit margin increases. I mean, you were mentioning he wants to vaccinate the whole world. He's admitted himself it would bring about approximately 700,000 deaths. Well, that's more than are going to die from the coronavirus altogether. So why in the world would we want to use a vaccine to cure the coronavirus when, in fact, it's going to bring about more deaths? We have had a caller here. I'm not succeeded in connecting. Are you there, caller? This is 210.
Yeah, this is Bruce in Texas. How do you hear me?
Okay, Bruce, great. Yeah, well, look, it's an unusual evening. We'll go ahead. You can go ahead and start. Ask James or me a question. Go ahead, Bruce.
Yeah, James is on topic, and I'm not going to – I don't have any questions for him yet. I just want to mention that I saw that the Hong Kong AstroTurf protests are being ratcheted up again. Dan, what do you have? Do you have any thoughts on that, whole situation?
I don't myself know much about it. James May, you could perhaps sketch for us what's going on. Tell us. Bruce, what's going on? Tell me about the protests.
Yeah, they're ratcheting up again, and it's on Fox News too. They're mentioning it. It's all geopolitical games that they're playing here, and it's mostly younger people, 15 to 20 years old, that are being agitated. You know, it kind of reminds me of the Arab Spring situation. It's all an attempt to take down a competitor to the NWO.
Okay, Bruce, we got the music coming, so we're heading into the break. This will run about 5 minutes, and then you can hang around and continue with your question. This is Jim Fetzer with my special guest, James McKinney, tonight. Stand by. We'll be right back.
Radio at freedomslips.com. And we'll be right back after this message.
Hi, everybody. It's me, the Fetch, host of Inside the Eye Live. Before the Sunday mainstream media political pundit talk shows, there is Inside the Eye Live, where we break down some of the weekly mainstream media talking points before the talking points even get aired. Add in some entertaining stories, weather, cats, intriguing and informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, the Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?
The future is uncertain. I know this. Death is inevitable. I know this. But one thing is certain. As free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion. And as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning, and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. because the freedom is slipping away.
Oh, please, oh, Hi, Karl Marx here. I am all seriousness today, my friends. There is this show you must not listen to. The ultimate remedy with this guy, LB. This guy has figured me out. I hear it on Tuesday, and he is telling the truth. I mean lies. Stay away from this guy. Where's my good hairbrush? Anybody see my mama?
Want to learn more about the Marxist agenda and other important stuff? Listen to The Ultimate Remedy with L.B. Bork, Tuesdays, 6 p.m. Eastern, right here on Revolution Radio.
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Well, I told James that we'd have a five-minute break, but obviously, see, with this protocol, with the new arrangement, it's shorter than 5 minutes. So we'll see if he'll be right back. Meanwhile, I have an email from my dear friend and collaborator, Mona, who reports, I use food-grade peroxide in my protocol. I use 10 drops a day, but I'm going to use it as a vaporizer also. Great idea. Did you hear what your guest stated, that it helps malaria and lupus, autoimmune issues, which in my opinion are all the same, along with Morgellons? James, you got a very welcome reception here from a listener who already is using food-grade peroxide.
Yeah, that's I didn't say it works for lupus. I was saying hydroxychloroquine.
Right, hydroxychloroquine works for lupus. I've never quite understood the nature of lupus. Could you fill me in if you happen to know? Because I feel ignorant about it.
It's possibly one of the more strange things. It's not like epilepsy, but I think it's one of those things that it's hard to treat, and so that's why it has a reputation. But I don't know much about it myself.
But it's an epileptic type of problem.
No. I was saying it's not like epilepsy. It's like epilepsy in that it's not one of the things that's easily treated.
I see.
You know, and so they give things to relieve it. One of the strange things about epilepsy, for example, is that when the sun goes down, it's called sundown syndrome. There's other uses of that term, but one of them is for epilepsy, that they are relieved of their symptoms at sundown, and then they come back.
Isn't that odd? So the sunlight must have, radiation must have something to do with it as a triggering effect.
Or who knows? Yeah, it could be electrical, could it be... I've often thought of that too. You know, people have done experiments with that. Because we're basically an antenna, we are very electrical. And for example, in use of, say, medical marijuana, one of the things it does in curing cancer patients is it activates the nerves and gets the cells communicating again. And that's one of the issues with cancer. It's like if you cut yourself, and those cells start, they say, okay, I don't see a cell next to me. So they start growing cells. And then when they connect again, they stop and they form a scar tissue. And you can eliminate some of that with vitamin E. But cancerous cells, even though there is a cell there next to them, they don't see it because they're not communicating. So that's why they believe that things like, it's called abarticoque, it's a Spanish word for, the fruit, durazno is another name.
I think we still have a caller online. Bruce, are you still there? I brought in someone else, I thought, but it may have been you calling back. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm not sure how your phone bank is going to work. I'll go ahead and put this next question out, and then I'll hang up or hang on if you wish. That way the next one can get on. I hate to tie up the phone.
Yeah, give us your next question, and and then you can, you know, just hang up and listen to the show while we answer. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. You're aware, you know, like 9/11, you had a number of people who saw huge flaws in the official story, like yourself and Dr. Barrett and others. And you had, well, we could probably consider now COINTELPRO insert into the truth movement, and Dr. Judy Wood with her space beams, you know, which is beyond explanation as to where they would put these things and where they would draw the power and how they would just destroy a building without having any visible mechanism of destruction besides its invisible ray, you know, or higher energy beam or however. And Dr. Wood had a litany of followers who would bounce onto every forum and flood comments bolstering her claim. Now with this coronavirus, we have this Dr. Day, who was a trauma surgeon in the 1980s, and she's put forward the notion that viruses aren't even really communicable diseases, that they're manufactured in the body. And she also has a troop of followers who post paragraphs of cut and paste and what have you. What do you have to think about that, about Dr. Day? Have you heard of her? She's been on quite a few programs lately.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of her. She was outspoken in relation to the Boston bombing by observing that you cannot have arms and legs blown off by explosives and there to be no blood. We had the anomaly there that as the smoke was still clearing, cameras zoomed in and you saw bodies missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. She was spot on because she's talking about a law of physiology. You cannot have arms and legs blown off and then by explosives and there be no blood. And the parties who were lying there with missing arms and legs turned out to be amputee crisis actors. So I have great admiration for Lorraine Day for having spoken up so clearly about the Boston bombing. Now, I'm no expert in virology, but I have featured Dr. Day about just this subject on the show. That was about a month ago, I'm going to guess. And I was very glad to have her on the program. It's interesting what you talk about Judy and her Praetorian Guard, because I became convinced long since that what she had was a cult and not a scientific research group. They have a sacred text, Where Did the Towers Go? They have a mystical leader, Judy Wood, and they have a Praetorian Guard consisting of Andrew Johnson, Thomas Potter, and a number of others who will attack anyone who's remotely critical. For example, back in 2012, when I organized the Vancouver hearings in June, in late May, I posted a 5-star review of her book, observing that I think it's the most comprehensive collection of photographs and documents and records that we have for 9/11. But that I took exception to her arguments against the use of nuclear devices. Well, when I came back from the conference, I discovered that it had over 2,000 comments. This is now just my review, my 5-star review of Judy's book. Had over 2,000 comments already, mostly by people who were assailing me for questioning in any way the content of her book. So at the conference, a great deal of information supporting my belief that it had been mini or micro nukes was presented. So I revised my review, downgraded it to 3 stars, and added specifically the results of the U.S. Geological Survey, which had done dust studies from 35 locations in lower Manhattan and discovered elements that in their quantity and correlation would only have been present had it been a nuclear event. Barium, strontium, lithium, lanthanum, tritium, some of which only exist in radioactive forms. Now, periodically, I'm approached by someone who wants to promote the directed energy hypothesis. But according to Occam's razor, a well-known principle of science, you don't want to multiply entities beyond necessity. In other words, if you already can account for the phenomena, for the evidence, You don't need to compound it with an additional factor. This applies, by the way, in the coronavirus situation, because we have suicides and murders that are being identified as having died from coronavirus. But obviously, coronavirus didn't make a difference to their deaths since they were murders or suicides. We have a state senator from Minnesota by the name of Jensen, who is himself also an MD, who received a directive that if he had a patient who died, that they ought to be identified as COVID, even if they hadn't been tested. He also reported that the hospitals were being given $13,000 for every patient they admitted and identified as a COVID patient, $39,000 for every patient they admitted and put on an incubator. So the whole thing is totally rigged. The numbers are grossly inflated. It's terribly embarrassing. I would like to see some evidence of what has taken place that requires a directed energy hypothesis. Let me add, by the way, that since I revised my review, if you go to Amazon.com and check out my review, this is not comments on Judy's book, this is on my review. There are over 7,500 comments on my review. The overwhelming majority, let's say 7,000, are negative in defenses of Judy Wood, where I challenge her to take into account the U.S. Geological Survey evidence, which he has never done. And when you have a figure who poses as a scientist, as James will confirm, because he's experienced with those he's been dealing with, when you get new results, new evidence, new data, you may have to revise your previously held opinions, accept hypotheses you previously rejected, reject hypotheses you previously accepted, and leaves others in suspense. So I'm waiting. I'm waiting for Judy to show she really is a scientist, but it's been many years now. I mean, that conference was what? Vancouver conference 2012. And I've not seen any sign that she's willing to take into account the evidence. There are also around 70,000 of first responders and local residents who have suffered from debilitating diseases associated with exposure to radiation, multiple myeloma, leukemia, esophageal, pancreatic cancer, very much the same variety we had at Chernobyl when they had the nuclear breakdown there. Bruce, I am going to tell you, someone tried to call and I can, it seems, only take one at a time, but I'm very pleased you called in. Okay.
I'll just close with saying that you're correct. Occam's razor, if you apply that to 9/11, the evidence, and as you said, the health impacts on first responders, it all points to a nuclear demolition. And when Judy Wood took that 90% truth and mixed it with 10% BS, and with the viruses, you know, we've had weaponized viruses for decades now, anthrax, etc. You know, and so you have to use Occam's razor in this too. You know, it'd be a monumental deception campaign to continue a virus biowarfare program for no reason at all. I mean, I just don't get it. I'll let you go though.
Excellent points, Bruce. I'm very glad you called in. Let me just say, 703 area code, I tried to add you to the call, but I was unable to do so. If you call now 703 area code, I should be able to add you to the call and you can have a conversation with me and James McCanny. James, I wanted to ask you something about electromagnetic fields, about wireless, and about 5G. And this is a huge subject, but I am petrified. I have a commentator, very good, one of the best, on my blog at jamesfetzer.org, who has noticed these huge 5G towers that are being brought into his community. And I'm just worried that under cover of the coronavirus that we're being played here, I'm trying to add now the 703 caller, but I don't know that I succeeded. Are you there, caller? Are you there? Try again, and I'll try to add you again. James.
Yeah, okay, James. Yeah. Just quickly on 5G. I was convinced from the very beginning that 5G, now they want everybody social distancing. They want you to distance apart, and then they wanted everybody to stay in their homes. Understand that 5G has already been implemented. It's already rolled out. They've been putting it in the schools. And what I've come to the conclusion that you can do something with antennas, phased antennas. You can direct energy into a locale. And so if you could have, say, your house or my house, where they would direct the beam and they don't move the antennas, it's directed, it's phase directed by the way they signal, you can put an awful lot of energy into a house and then basically sterilize the people, cause cancer. And so 5G is not a telecommunication. I've spent 25 years of my life in telecommunications. I think I know all about it. I know about antennas. But 5G is something very different. And it's a very powerful technology. This is what I use as an example. Back in the television days, remember the old big satellite dishes, the MACOM? There were 3 meter, 10 foot diameter big satellite dishes for TV. People put them in their backyards.
Yes.
And Stanley Hubbard down in KSTP put a lot of his life savings into what is now DirecTV, where you put the power up in the satellite and you only need this little antenna on your house. This is what's going on with 5G. They're putting the power up into the transmitter. So these are extremely powerful transmitters. They're local. It's not a long range signal. So they have to have a lot of them all over the place. And it's so they you're basically putting an extremely powerful signal every place. And the other benefit of that for the people, the insane people that are doing this, is now your telephone, you don't need a battery. The most of your cell phone right now is battery, the screen, which is the human interface, and then the antenna and a little bit of electronics. Now they can boil that down with 5G because 5G, the power is in the transmitting tower. They can boil down a telephone into something a tenth the size of a grain of rice, put it in a needle and shoot it into your body.
Yeah.
So this is part of the whole rollout of 5G. This is all coordinated. This has been going on for a long time. There was a video of a guy who was, I don't know if he was, he went up a tower and he brought back down one of the cards they were installing in 5G and it said, COVID-19 was.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. And so, I mean, this tells you that there's a lot more going on. It's not just a new cell phone service.
Let me repeat the 703. Try again. I've tried to add you a couple of times. Maybe next time will be the charm. Please try to call again, area code 703. Though I still see, this is odd. Maybe I haven't got rid of Bruce because I'm still seeing him here. Here's 703. Okay, I'm trying to add you. But 703, are you there? Have I added you? I'm really sorry I'm having so much trouble.
But James, while you're trying to do that, I want to make a comment. You were talking about the Judy Woods thing.
And yes, yes, please do. Please do.
And it's, you know, whether it's the coronavirus or whether it's the two towers coming down, et cetera, all of these stories are sidelines. And so the real question is, you know, we could argue all day over how the buildings came down. I think that there were multiple methods used, but I don't, you know, and I'm not even going to go there as to what my beliefs are. But that's a side issue. The real issue is who did this.
Sure.
You know, and that's where the concentration should be. And so,
sure, of course. Like,
Judy Woods is a side circus show over here with everybody. Well, oh, how did the buildings come down? You know, and the real issue is who did this? And so you can see a lot of disinformation stories are creating side issues where people spend a lot of their time and it's really not getting to the core issue.
Well, get this, James, you may or may not be aware, but Architects and Engineers, which is led by Richard Gage and with whom Stephen Jones, whom I invited to be my co-chair when I founded Scholars for 9/11 Truth and Judy Wood and her dues group, refused to discuss who was responsible and why. And of course, absent the narrative, all this is so much technical nonsense to the average American. Now, if they understood that this was an orchestrated event to create a pseudo justification for American forces to go into the Middle East and to take out the modern Arab states, it served as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the entire region, and eventually to confront the Persian nation of Iran that it appears to have originated in the fertile imagination of Bibi Netanyahu, and that it was promoted by the think tank Project for a New American Century, most of the members of which went into the Department of Defense, and virtually all of whom are dual U.S.-Israeli citizens, if they understood that 9/11 was brought to its complements of the CIA, the neocons in the Department of Defense, and the Mossad, then they might be interested in paying more attention because, of course, if it was done in any high-tech manner, it cannot have been carried out by 19 Islamic terrorists under the control of a guy off in a cave in Afghanistan who actually was working for the CIA. Osama bin Laden was our man in Afghanistan. He was instrumental in getting Stinger missiles into the hands of the Mujahideen they used to shoot down Soviet helicopters and planes and drove them out of Afghanistan. He was Colonel Tim Osman. That was his rank in the CIA. He was visited in a hospital in Dubai by an official of the agency shortly before his death from his various medical maladies. It's tough to get dialysis machines in and out of those caves in Afghanistan. On 15 December 2001, there were local obituaries, Fox News and CNN both published announcements at the time about the death of Osama bin Laden, where Barack Obama found it politically expedient to resurrect him and have him die a second time in a completely fabricated raid on a compound to position himself for a triumphal reelection. That's the thumbnail sketch of what went down here with Osama, James. And I tell you, I've done more research on this stuff than I'd like to admit, but it all fits together.
Right. Yeah. And once you start putting, it's like a big puzzle on a table, little kid's puzzle with the pieces all over. Once you start getting down to the last pieces, then it's a matter of a few details. But yeah, there's no question what happened there.
713, try again, try again. I tried three or four times to bring in. I do not know why it's not working. It ought to be working. You're calling the right number. I'm seeing you there and trying to bring you in. If I actually answer the phone, however, I'm cut off from James in the studio, so I can't do that. I can only merge the call. And for whatever reason it worked, I got a merge with the call from Bruce in Texas, but I'm not having success in a merge with you from wherever. So please try again.
James, do you have access to your email? I sent you a picture.
Yeah, I'll take a look.
Yeah, just pull that up. It's something I put together, a little photo collage. It's a picture of Gollum.
I've used that photograph of Bill Gates with the death, the skull-like face. I've used that several times, James. Did you put that together? I've used it multiple times.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, no, I like it, yeah.
Yeah, just post it wherever you want. But I thought that was apropos, the same look on your face.
Very apropos. So, I mean, my understanding is that 5G weakens the human immune system, so it makes us vulnerable to threats in the environment that normally wouldn't bother us at all. I'm very troubled that Wuhan was the first area where 5G was rolled out. They have 10,000 5G towers in Wuhan. It was about 6 weeks later the coronavirus broke out. I do believe it was made in the USA, but transported to China. Some believe it was a group of military officers participating in an international military competition where they seem to take no real interest or have really prepared for the physical events. But that would be consistent with their having been on an intelligence operation to bring the virus to Wuhan. I'd be very interested in your comments on the effects because we have a professor emeritus from Washington State University who's done a great deal of research and who has suggested that rolling out 5G on a massive scale without conducting any safety studies is the stupidest idea in the history of mankind.
Yeah, well, the one thing I want to mention, though, and I want to be real clear here, is that I don't want to go off. And when I first started talking about all of this on the radio, I would get people calling in. I think they were plants. And they were demanding that I accept that 5G was responsible for this. When they first started out, they were saying that 5G was actually responsible for the transmutation of the bat virus from the wet animal place of, marketplace in Wuhan. And so this has taken, it's morphed a number of times. But I don't want the whole issue of how this virus got to Wuhan and how it got transported around the world
to sidetrack,
sidelined with this idea of 5G,
right?
Because I see that as a different disinformation ploy, just like how did the buildings come down at 9/11?
Well, but we actually know the answer to that, James. So that's actually not a real problem. I'm still seeing if 703, I can get 703, and I seem baffled. I see 703. I've invited 703 to Skype to call in. So 703, try calling in if you can. I'm inviting you to call. Go ahead, James. More.
But the issue, here's my personal belief on the whole coronavirus thing. And it appears that there's many variations, and there were many variations right in the beginning. It appears, for example, that the people in northern Italy were being sick because of a flu shot that they had received in the fall. There was a high correlation there. So there's so many things going on here.
There was an actor from Hamburg
that did a video. He said they went back in Hamburg and reclassified all the deaths. He said there was not a single COVID-19 death after they reclassified the deaths. So I think that if you did that in the United States, especially the big centers like New York, where you've got Andrew Cuomo, who wants this to be the biggest thing ever, or California or the other states where the numbers are highest, I think if you went back and seriously reclassified, you'd find that the numbers are minimal at best on the deaths.
Let me just say 708, I tried to get you in too. I got your call, but it didn't work. I cannot explain why. I'm apologetic about it. I'm missing Mitchell, and of course he would field my calls ordinarily. What about 5G and the risk to health by 5G, James? You seem like the perfect person to address that question.
Right, and there again, that's the secondary question. One, number one is it related to the virus in some way? Number two, is 5G just as a topic all to itself a good thing? And absolutely not. 5G got rolled out, and it's this assumption that technology has got to be good. It's, you know, this idea that any new innovation is good, and it's really not true. There are places I found out where a lot of rich people live where they don't allow any cell phone service at all. And I was surprised to find this out. So there are people who don't have cell phone service in their region in closed areas. And I was in
Chicago Brew just tried to call, and I tried to bring in Brew, but I was unable to do so. Very sorry about that. So, James, you're telling me. Oh, Brew, are you here?
Yes, sir.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Finally, we made a contact. Go ahead. Give us your thoughts, Brew.
You don't have these kind of problems at John Moore's show now, do you, James?
John Moore's show. I don't remember. Have I been on John Moore's show? Go ahead, Brew. Give us your thoughts.
Nothing. I'm just pretty much following along. I don't know if I got anything significant to, you know, really shine in here. But, you know, James, when you get into this 5G, they want to use it as a lure, a bait, a weapon, so that they can turn it around on you. You know what I mean? And so what you were saying, some people trying to get you to take a side, you know, you're doing the right thing. You're a smart man, you know, which is non-debatable at any point. But There is definitely, as you were saying, it will affect us. All this electronics. Think about cancer clusters with the power lines, and think about the radiation. People having Bluetooth things in their ears that are causing things. People that are getting cancer or brain cancer because they sleep with their iPad or other things under their pillow. You know, all this stuff is relevant, but they're trying to make us believe like they're not. You know, and this 5G thing, when it comes into play, I don't know what it is, what it has to do with, you know, their end game here with the vaccinations and the nanotech they're talking about and all this other crap they're talking about, and the RNA makeup of it, and how this is going to play in with whatever they're doing with, again, this 5G or new network system. It's go ahead.
Like I say, it's not just telecommunications, it's something more. And with the phase focusing, I will just call it phase focusing, of various antennas, you could concentrate a lot of energy into a house. And it comes down to the fact of adding waves. It's wave addition, if you want to go back to simple physics terms. Phase coordination to accentuate the energy in a given location where a person is, etc. And so that's why they want the social distancing. It's not only because of coronavirus, it's because 5G doesn't work if you group together. It cannot identify more than like a person 5 feet apart. And so, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
So anyway, 5G is it's something that it's already there. If you look up a 5G map of the entire country, it's already there. There's nothing future about it. It's already there. And during the lockdown, they put it in all the schools. So part of returning to school, I've seen some videos already of school moms, the principals or whatever, talking about the kids going back to school. And they're talking about, okay, kids, now they're pointing round circles on the floor so the kids know how much 2 meters is, so they can stay 2 meters apart in the school. No talking, can't have any communication. This is going to be one of the weirdest times. I told people, don't let your kids go back to school. They're going to
demand
vaccinations before the kids can go back to school. But I see it as taking over the kids. This is a way they're already talking about going into homes and taking kids out of homes. This is just the first step. They're just conditioning people to having people come into your home, first calling up and saying, do you know that you were identified as being near somebody that had COVID-19? We have to take you and have you tested and quarantined for 14 days, or your kids, you know. Now, imagine they are talking about 300,000 tracers, contact tracers, being employed in places like New York. This is getting insane. So this was what they're doing is slowly rolling out all of these other conditions and steps based on the phony coronavirus. And I'm convinced that there is and was and is a real virus. You know, it's certainly making people sick, and so it's something very real. It doesn't have the numbers that they're saying, so they had to fake the numbers with the fake test and with the fake death certificates, and to keep the lockdown going. And when things reopen, what I guarantee you they're going to do is they're going to go in and drop some, I call it fairy dust, in certain locations. It might be in schools, it might be in restaurants. And all of a sudden, these people are going to come down with a virus. And this is a virus that affects the respiratory system. It's really bad, and you don't want to get it. But this is what I see happening. And then they're going to say, well, look, you can't have reopening because look at all these people that are getting sick from this restaurant. This is a chess game. This is a chess game, and it goes along with the world vaccination policy, which is big pharma. And then they come along with the cure, the virus, the antiviral drugs, on and on and on. This is not going to go away And just like 9/11, nobody's looking for the culprits. Nobody is looking for the people who pulled this off. You got your Fauci's and other public people, but there's a lot of other people in the background that took to pull this whole thing off. And nobody's looking for them, and they're still out there. They could still regenerate new viruses in new situations, in new communities, and keep this whole thing going.
There's a brilliant article in the Millennium Report that I republished on my blog at jamesfetzer.org that goes considerably into the players in the background, James. You might like that particular piece. Go ahead, Brew. Go ahead, Brew.
Well, a chess game is something polite and quiet, and two people go walk away from it. This is warfare and psychological. It's at warfare in every level. Every level of warfare you can imagine, this is what's going on. You know, they're fairy dust or whatever. Yeah, let's not specify virus. So just make people sick, come down with illness to compromise their immune system, to make them get diseased, you know.
The term is fairy dust because, if people come down with a respiratory illness, it could be plastic. It could be microplastic particles that you sprinkle in and it gets in people's lung and causes them to be sick, you know.
James, we keep asking this whole time, what's the delivery system? Well, we have several theories, but one of them is the food supply. And, you know, people like Cass Ingram and others, and I've heard other people speak of this, that it's coming from our environment. We are, as Americans and other Western nations, are compromised with the foods we're eating and what they're doing to the foods and the chemicals and the pesticides and the hormones, you name it. What we eat and what we don't eat, we are compromised. We are vulnerable to anything they want to do. So as soon as they could take that, well, I always feel sick and I got this and whatever, and they start putting in your head, well, that's because of this. You need this now. You know, it's easy. People are hypochondriacs, but they don't take accountability for themselves to try and fix it through nutrition or, you know, avoidance of certain things in foods or environments, like don't swim in these waters that we know they're dumping toxins into. You know, I mean, there's common sense here, but we don't have it anymore in America or a lot of these countries because of the Common Core system and mind warfare, we'll say.
Yeah, well, and that's why I call it fairy dust, because we don't know what it is. It's a general term for something that we don't know what it is. I mean, it could be something like nanoparticles.
Well, here's one for you, just James. I just heard this today, that a few years ago or sometime back, Starbucks actually put out a drink called like the Unicorn, and one of the ingredients in it was fairy dust. Ground fairy dust. So now fairy dust doesn't exist, or at least we don't think it exists, but that was the ingredient for this Unicorn drink. I heard that today.
That was a secret ingredient brewed, right? A non-existent ingredient called fairy dust.
So, yeah, James, you're reflecting when you said that you saw this video. That came out of, like, what, Quebec, Canada, didn't it? Where they were going to invite the kids back. They're inviting the kids back to school and how they're all going to stand in line. And there's only like six or seven kids per classroom. And then they get at recess or whatever, they got to stand on X's and be separated. It's all ridiculousness. And it's multi-level.
Cafeteria, they would only eat at their desks. Yeah. On and on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This whole distancing thing is multi-level. First of all, we're training the AI. I keep forgetting the name every time I come up try to say it. They're honing in. They're tuning. They're fine tuning the biometric system to focus on your eyes and your ears, because if you're wearing a mask, sometimes your ears are exposed. But they're definitely focusing on your eyes for the biometrics for your eyes. They're focusing in on the way you walk. There's all sorts of ways that they're picking up your hand gestures and so on and so forth. But they got better ability to do this when people are distance apart, because once people start clustering together, they're not able to pick up all the signals. So, you know, this, it's multi-agendaed, you know, and just to make people psychologically unstable. You know, think about it. Guys running down the bike path or riding his bicycle down the bike path, and people are jumping out of the way because the guy's not wearing a mask. This is psychological scrutiny.
Well, it's standard abusive behavior. Abusive behavior is constant haranguing, constant, people are off guard, they cannot relax. And they say one of the most difficult jobs is a bus driver, because people are coming in, out, asking them questions, how much change is this? And, you know, and they don't have any control over this activity that's coming at them constantly. So they say psychologically, a bus driver has one of the more difficult jobs, which is kind of interesting. But it's the same thing. You just don't know when the next thing is going to come at you. So it's completely keeps you completely off guard. And that's the whole point. It's to take the public, use fear. And the other thing, who's most fearful? A mom with kids. You know, like, what can we do so the kids don't get this? You know, she's worried to death. So, you got to take a vaccine? Okay, where do we go to get it? At Walmart? How about Target? Yeah, there too. You know, they've been priming the public here. And I've said this before, that women have to talk to women to wake them up. That, hey, this is, don't be caught up in this fear generation with vaccinations, with, this is just the latest one. There's no proof, for example, that the vaccines they're giving people today work. There's no testing that's been done. There was a court case that was recently won by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and another group of people, and they demanded to see the tests for vaccinations. There isn't any, because what was it, 1996, the Child Protection Act is called, or something. But basically, it makes the pharmaceutical companies immune from prosecution, and all they have to do is label all the different diseases that you can get from taking their vaccines, and they're scot-free. They don't. You cannot sue them. And but then on the other hand, you have people insisting when you go to the doctor, it's a marketing thing they do, and they put the parent on the defense of you. If you don't have your kids vaccinated, you have to sign this document, or if you have somebody in an elderly home, then you have to sign a document that they are not receiving vaccinations. Even Supreme Court cases. Or like you're saying, Dershowitz. I mean, it's gotten to the point now where if you oppose vaccinations, then you're the nutcase.
They make it equivalent. Look, they make that equivalent A with the Holocaust denying, and they love this denying term: Holocaust denier, climate denier, vaccine denier, COVID denier. Okay, that's shame. It's just shame tactic. Oh, you're shame. We're shaming you. You know, that's what this is. And it's 1986 under Reagan when they passed that act that the pharmaceutical companies and the companies that produce them, patent them, are immune from liability, because they couldn't keep going because people were getting injured. People were hurt, getting hurt, dying, getting illnesses, paralyzation, and so forth. They said, we can't be profitable this way. You guys got to help us out. So Bush, who was basically running the Reagan administration, gave them immunity. Then they were like, yeah, let's crank them out. And it is their goal to get anything they possibly can classified as a vaccine. Therefore, they get immunity. $1 billion, $1 billion, $1 billion. That's why the CDC has so many patents. That's why they got 300 and something patents in the pipeline, or vaccines in the pipeline to be produced and output. That's why they got the kids today, the children, from the moment they're born, getting a vaccination, and they're scheduling up to 72 now. To the time they're 18, then they want the adult vaccinations. So this whole big rollout with this mode RNA, which is Moderna, is translated to birth, because once they do this new RNA sequenced vaccine, it's going to change your DNA. It's going to change who you are. So basically, they are birthing a new species. If they get away with what they're doing, this will be the most mass crime in the history of all of our history that we think we know.
It turns out the sample testing with Moderna has been a fiasco. They've had a 20% severe effect rate, which may even include death. They're not releasing the raw data, but it has blown up in their face. This is the Fauci Gates preferred vaccine, and it's not playing out their way.
Look, Gates says, look, let's just take it at this number. Gates says if there's 7 billion people on the planet, 10% of those people may die. So that's 700 million people that may die just by accepting the vaccination, not to mention the people that are going to get injured. And you could take time after time after time, especially the 1976 Zika virus vaccination that they propagandized and got the population to take, and how many people got injured from that. Then those are just the people we know of.
I think it was 1%, Brew. It was 700,000, not 700 million. If I
don't know, 10%, I think.
No, it wasn't 10. It was 1%.
All right. Well, whatever. It's Bill Gates we're talking about. You know, Bill Gates
That's a higher number than are going to die from the virus that it's supposed to protect against.
Listen, this is Bill Gates. James and Jim, listen. In one of Bill Gates's speeches or talks, he says, and he uses these three words, the final solution. And it's reference to vaccinations. He also says depopulation, zero carbon. You know, these are the things he talks about. These are the things he says. He doesn't say things accidentally. He practices and he knows exactly what he's saying, and he relies on us not to follow and understand
and
take it.
The zero carbon formula he includes is a multiple, including people who are breathing out CO2. I mean, it was insane. He said you've got to go to zero with one of these, and it was humanity. He is going to reduce the population of humanity as much as possible. The man is insane. He is absolutely stark raving mad. He is clinically insane, I have no doubt.
That's why you got to wear a mask, because they don't want you breathing their oxygen or putting carbon dioxide into the air. So you must exhale it and breathe it back in to make yourself sick, and then you'll die, and it's solving a lot of the problems.
You're unconscious or even kill you ultimately. James, Bruce said a lot. I'd like your comment.
Well, the other thing is that I always say that if you see their face, you see their name, they're not the real people in charge. So I considered Bill Gates a useful idiot. And his so-called billions are nothing in value. That could be stripped away from him in a New York second. So I don't he's the person out there. And if, say, you attacked him and took him out of the picture by legally or any other means, they would just put somebody else there because they've got him lined up. You know, that it wouldn't be difficult to find somebody to take his place on the world scene. So the people that are really in charge of this, you don't see. You don't see their names. You don't see where they are. And what I've learned is these are families that are operating invisibly around the world. And they have fingers in in political offices all over the world, in countries all over the world. And what I've always said also is that the CIA is the police force for these people. Sometimes people go, well, the CIA is an agency of the United States government. No, it's not. That might be a front. But the CIA is got their fingers in everything, and they always have been the representative police force of the World Bank. So that's where this goes back to. Bill Gates is the reason Bill Gates got in with these people was when he sold out the American public and the world public and allowed the back doors into Microsoft software, into the operating system, so that the NSA could get into your computer anytime you wanted. He actually tried to resist that for a little bit, and then he realized that, you know, either he played ball with them or he was done. So he played ball with them. All of a sudden, he's hanging out with Bill Clinton. He's getting he picked up a almost completed large telescope facility in South America and paid to have it completed. So all of these toys came his way. And so his foundation and everything that's come along with it is part of his selling out to the dark side, literally. But make no mistake, Bill is just a useful idiot. And That's my estimate of Bill Gates. But, you know, he represents them, and so that's representative of what's going on in the world. So the world has been positioned. We're in a horrifically bad situation. And even though there might be legal recourse, I don't foresee any legal recourse coming out of what's going on here. So people have to simply step back and take care of themselves. It's at that point.
Brew.
Well, it's agreed that Bill Gates, Hillary Clinton, a lot of these others are just middle management. You know, they're the face, the bag men, the money bag men, and so on and so forth. And they're there to present agendas and push it. And they're paid, and they're TV actors, and they live this life of luxury. But Bill Gates, well, he was born into this. He wasn't. I almost started to say he was chosen, but he was born into it. Look where his father comes from. Look where his mother comes from. Okay, his father was the CEO of Planned Parenthood and, you know, was doing all that right from the beginning. So Bill Gates was just born right into this. So, you know.
A lot of these people were born into that. Yeah.
Right. Right. So,
Hillary Clinton hitched her wagon onto Billy because he was Billy as a young guy. My understanding is that Billy is the son of one of the Rockefellers.
And, well, they say Billy's a Rockefeller and Hillary Clinton is established with the Rothschilds. That's the rumor.
Her dad was in the mafia in Chicago, but you know, there's a lot of connections there. But she knew that when there's a picture I have it somewhere on my webpage. It's Billy sitting at a lobster bake. He's sitting next to George Bush Sr., and they're all very young, at Kenny Bunkport in Maine. Sitting next to them is George Wallace, from the governor of Alabama, with the current wife of George Wallace. And they're all sitting there, and Billy's drinking a Sprite. And on his left hand is the wedding ring, which means that Hillary had already hooked her wagon to him way back then. But anyway, I could go on and on about them.
Was the passenger in Kennedy's automobile? Am I wrong?
Mary Jo Kopechne?
No, he just said George Wallace. So wasn't George Wallace in the front passenger seat of Kennedy's car when he was assassinated?
Absolutely not. Where'd you come up with that, Bruce?
I don't know. For some reason, it ring this tone in my ear. I'm asking a question.
Driver was William Greer. Rory Kellerman was the agent in charge in the passenger seat. Those were the only two in the front. They'd moved JFK's military aide to the last vehicle so they could fire a shot through the windshield at Jack in the throat that otherwise would have hit the military aide. No. George Wallace had nothing to do with the assassination.
Who was the guy that took the leg shot? Because this is what I'm mixing up.
Took the which shot?
The leg shot. He got hit in the leg. Who was the governor? Who was the guy in the front?
John Connally was the governor. He wasn't hit in the leg. He was hit in the back.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry. For some reason.
Yeah,
I apologize. All right. I apologize. I'm getting hit with 5G. Give me a break.
May well be. It looks from James' account we're all being hit with 5G. You're saying, James, they used the cover of the coronavirus to load the schools with 5G? That was going on during this lockdown?
Right. And wow. I've seen videos where they're installing it in the schools.
I'd like to see some of that. If you could send me any of that, plus hydrogen peroxide, something I want to add to the presentation. Right. I'm giving a symposium on it tonight. So send it away.
As soon as the show's over, yeah. I will send that.
Brew, you've been excellent. Go ahead. If you've got a further question or two, we have a couple minutes left.
Okay, I believe they've been putting not just in the schools and other educational buildings, but also the government plazas and so on, and courts and government buildings, I believe, since all those have been pretty much empty, too, from the public. They've used this to install them in those areas as well. You know, one of the key components, James, of the 5G antennas is the active denial system, where they could actually turn those on and the crowd control and whatever else on people. And then there's also the belief that, you know, as I think you're suggesting in some manner, shape, or form, that they, you know, and that makes you uneasy. It burns your body from the inside out. That's what the active denial system is. And again, that being a key component. And also, maybe they can, with your cell phone devices and all these other smart devices in our area around you, because you're constantly surrounded by them, because they're making everything a smart device, they could do this voice-to-skull technology. And all this comes into play with pharmaceuticals, with vaccinations, and whatever else toxins they put in the system, because they're making people loopy, and they're very easily susceptible. Any one of us could be susceptible. We don't know how far and how deep and how hardcore this can, because they've spent their time and energy over a long time trying to get this stuff right because they had a plan. And, you know, the CIA, isn't it the true story that the Mossad? Go ahead. Well, the CIA, weren't they? It was the Mossad. The Mossad was brought in to basically help build up the CIA. So basically, the Mossad and the CIA have been pretty much one and the same ever since. They never, that once they went in to help build it, they never left.
Yeah.
Well, Brew, I'm really sorry others weren't able to call in, but you and Mark have both done a great job of raising significant questions with my special guest tonight. I'm very glad you called in. I'd like to give James the last few minutes to sum up his thoughts about all these subjects. I'm so glad we got into 5G, James. I think that's so terribly important, and it looks as though it's going to be an immediate risk to the public, to our health and our welfare, and to our children, along with the ever-present vaccine immunization problem, which is turning out to be a catastrophe.
I found it interesting. I listened to Trump's cabinet meeting the other day about opening up the country, and he was very specific. He said they're researching vaccines and treatments, and he repeated it, and so he's moving away from this idea of vaccine, and he's been contacted now, I know, by a number of people that the vaccine is not going to cover all the variations of the virus, you know, et cetera.
Yes.
But he's also looking at treatments, and there's some basic fact. You can't give a vaccine to somebody that's been exposed to the virus. And since the test is bogus, how do you know who's got the been exposed really and who hasn't?
Right, and we've all been exposed, and the vaccines are useless.
You can't give the vaccine to somebody that's been exposed. So you need some kind of a treatment for those people that have been exposed. You can't just blanket give the vaccine to people that have been exposed. So right there, it takes away a big part of the population. And then you have the issue of some people they call recovered. What does recovered mean? Does that mean the virus is still in your body, but you have antibodies? Does it mean you've gotten all the little viruses out of your body? I mean, this is so vague. And you see countries like China have completely gone back to normal. And I contacted the people. Nobody has taken virus vaccinations in China. There was this belief.
It's been great having James McCanny here. Sorry I didn't get you all on. I just remind you, JamesTheConspiracyGuy.com.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
If you think for one second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, You burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world